Hello, everyone, and welcome back
I've
to a new
abandoned my
episode.
child!
I love this one.
Yes, folks.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the IndieEds podcast. I'm your host, Maddie, at Monrovian Prince on Twitter. On this week's podcast, we have...
Lily at underscore Earthrise. I don't have news. I was on like a month ago. Nothing's changed.
This is Zach at Waffle113. I don't have news either. I was on like 2 weeks ago.
Hi, this is Jackson at horse underscore jeans on Twitter, and I have abandoned no children. This is a no children hiding podcast right here. Anti-children hiding strongly.
I probably clipped so hard on that, honestly. Like that, I probably clipped super hard. Hey, what's everybody? I have news though. I missed last week's podcast because your boy had to get up early in the morning, and I didn't feel like podcasting because I didn't listen to Arctic Monkeys or Beach House enough. So hey, I'm sorry. Can't, I'm a bad host, all right? I've abandoned my child, all that, yada yada yada. But I'm back. We got a podcast for y'all. We were supposed to, this was going to be a double decker podcast. Like, we were going to go for the full meat of some shit. But we are going to hold off. But do not fret. We'll have another podcast actually like in a couple of days. So do not fret. And we'll tell you what that is at the end of this episode.
We decided that instead of doing like a 6-person podcast for like 2 hours, that we should do something that's not that.
Exactly.
So here we are.
Exactly. We're being a little more concise, all right? This is, again, it's 2 good podcasts for the price of 2 podcasts. So, 1 for 1.
Which are both free.
Exactly. Hey, let's get into the news. First and foremost, there is going to be a new Interpol album. It is called Marauder, and it comes out on August 24th, apparently. This is a leak
Marauder?
That someone found.
Marauder? Marauder? It's Marauder.
Shut,
Maddie.
Take you. Fine. I'm abandoning my child again. You take over for me. I'm out.
All right.
Now there's the title of this album in the MacGruber font.
No. I get to talk about it now because Maddie lost his privileges. New Interpol album is supposedly coming out in August, and it's supposedly called Marauder. And we have not gotten, like, an official confirmation announcement from the band, but apparently they're playing on late-night TV soon, I believe, and are generally posing about to strike into album rollout mode, it seems like. So, new Interpol music in 2018. We're not going to get too deep into it because it hasn't even been officially announced yet, but it's safe to say that both Lily and myself are, like, fangirling pretty hard right now, because even though we don't know of what Interpol quality we're getting... I mean, the fact that we're rolling the dice again at all on Interpol is just generally a good thing. The chances of them putting out another capital amazing Interpol album, I just need it. I need it now. Give me the album, please. That's my
summary. I almost don't need the album. Like, the idea of this album is my album of the year. I don't want to actually hear any of it. Like, the concept of an Interpol album named Marauder is better than any Interpol album could possibly be in 2018.
Oh, 100%. Like it just sounds like, ooh, I can imagine just that red-ass album cover already. If the album cover's not red, I don't want to listen to it. Get that shit out of my face. Yeah, I'm really, really, really excited for this. I hope we hear more details soon. And also, I hope we get a big world tour next year, because, damn it, I need to see Interpol live.
Exactly. I need to see Stella Was a Diver. And whatever the fuck is after that, if I don't see that live, I'm going to hurl myself through a window, all right? There's a lot of reasons why I'm going to hurl myself through a window sometime in 2019 if stuff doesn't happen in 2018. Like, I posted on Twitter, like, hey, if Danny Brown doesn't get Angel Olsen on his next album, I'm going to hurl myself through a window.
He's trying,
and he responded.
He's trying.
He responded saying he's trying, and Danny, thank you. Thank you, Danny. Danny, of course, friend of the... Now, Danny Brown is officially a friend of the Indie Heads podcast now. He may not know
who
it,
remains,
but he
remains
is.
Doing God's work and will probably release the hip-hop album of the year soon no one will talk about.
Well, hey, he might... Hey, hey. But
hey.
Next, but the,
hey.
But next piece of news, I think. Are we good for the next piece of news?
Yeah, I will just say I'm so sad I blew my seeing Interpol ticket on being 12. I understood nothing back then.
Oof, oof.
And I saw them.
Oof. That's awful.
What a waste.
Oof. Okay.
That is rough.
The next piece of news. Once again, Vampire Weekend, they're doing some bullshit again. They're teasing stuff. They changed their Facebook profile picture, and they announced some shows, I think in California somewhere, that sold out like instantly, according to Ollie. Friend slash kind of former, kind of current member of the podcast, Ollie. Chat veteran Ollie is what we'll call him at this point. But basically, Ezra Koenig, all right, he's a thought, all right, he's a freaking nasty hoe. And I'm going to stop. But yeah, it's Vampire Weekend. They're going to, it's actually good we brought this up because I actually listened to the self-titled for the first time ever 2 days ago. That's like one of my V cards in indie music that I've officially crossed off the list. There's a few that I will never cross off the list just because I need to be a strong warrior in my takes.
Listen to is this it,
shut up? Coward. No, I will never
listen to it.
I will never.
You can run from it, you can hide from it, but destiny comes. Listen to goddamn is this it? You puny man.
I don't hear anybody. Nope, I'm not gonna. That's the one. Like I said, I wouldn't listen to it. But when you guys keep telling me don't listen to it, it's gonna or telling me to listen to it, I'm gonna just go like, no, I'm gonna defy you guys.
You know what you should do, Maddie, is you should not listen to Is This It, but you should listen to Room on Fire and become a contrarian and say Room on Fire is better without ever listening.
That's a good idea. Absolutely. I might do that.
I'm firmly on Room on Fire Island. Actually, it's a better album in my opinion. So just do that instead as your way to spite the Strokes.
All right, I might think about it. But okay. Anyways,
all I have to contribute to this Vampire Weekend news is 8 minute cake vodka. 8 minute cake ka kwasa kwasa when.
Shouts out to Time.
Oof, the streets need it. Yeah. Just release the damn album. Just let us find out what this is. I have like no expectation. I don't know how to feel at all, and I just not want something so I can start like beginning the process of whatever this Vampire Weekend album is. I just want to start. I want to start feeling however I'm going to feel about this. I'm tired of waiting.
These are going to be love songs about Rashida Jones, so I feel like it's going to be good. It's going to be good.
It's going to be good shit. I know it will be.
But sadder news, though, to report, Zach, actually, do you want to, I think you're more familiar with this bit of news.
Yeah, I can take this really quickly. Stuart Lupton of Jonathan Fireeater passed away earlier this week. He was 43, which obviously no age. And even if you don't know who Jonathan Fireeater are necessarily, if you've read Meet Me in the Bathroom, you probably have an idea of how important Stuart Lupton and Jonathan Fireeater were to reestablishing New York as a rock city in the 90s, early 2000s. I'm not as familiar with them as I should be, considering that I love The Walkmen and a bunch of Fireeater alumni are in The Walkmen. I've heard enough, and especially like the EP Tremble Under Boom Lights, that's a fantastic record, and if nothing else, that should stand as Stuart Lupton's legacy, and he's just gone way too soon, man. I don't know what else to say. I mean,
like, there's the thing people say, like, about the Velvet Underground, the idea that, like, they didn't sell a lot of records, but everyone who bought a record bought a guitar, and that's kind of the story of this band to a much smaller degree, where that, like, they never really became, like, the band out of the scene that they ended up sort of being a pioneer of. But, like, Interpol doesn't happen if they don't hear that Jonathan Fireeater EP. Like, they've said that before. Like, the Jonathan Fireeater EP was, like, in the green room playing at all the early Interpol performances. Like, that's the kind of shit that they were tapping into when they were then making their own lane of that kind of New York early 2000s post-punk that we know and I stand hard. And so and that Jonathan Fireeater album, their one album that's like on streaming services and stuff, is very, very, very good and worth checking out if you've never experienced them. And also if you've read Meet Me in the Bathroom, which is the book of which they are basically the starting point of He clearly had like a very, yeah. very difficult life that involved a lot of drug problems and personal problems and things like that. So, I mean, it's really, really upsetting and terrible. And another artist that we have to talk about in this sort of way. Yeah. It's not good. Not good at
even
all.
Even in like the state he may have been in when he was giving those interviews, you could tell he was still sharp. Like, he still knew what was going on, and you could tell he was a very charismatic figure based on what others had to say about him and based on what he had to say about himself. And his presence is going to be missed, I can tell. Like,
for sure, yeah.
Hamilton Lighthouser posted a tribute to him, and it was very touching, because without Jonathan Fireeater, there is no Walkman. And that's a pretty thing to think about if you're one of those early 2000s New York rock scene people.
Yeah, a lot of good music came out of that scene, and a lot of people in that scene have cited them as like, this was a band that was important to not only the music that was happening there, but also the kind of the way that that music was happening there. It is indebted a lot to them. And it's a sad, sad kind of thing to talk about. All right. Yeah, let's move on. I think that covers it pretty well for news for this week. Mm-hmm. Let's get into some hot singles. We got some hot singles this week.
Yes, we do.
Not the kind that are in your area, but the kind that bop.
Jesus Christ. Jackson, you want to take the first one?
I would love to take the first one. The first one is the Gorillaz. I hate to make this joke every time, but the Gorillaz are back, baby. They're good again. Au, wolf out. Like, I mean, this is so fascinating to me, where, like, the Gorillaz reach for the stars and were like, okay, we're going to come back after... How many years was it in between Humans and the album before that? Was it, like, six?
Seven.
Between Plastic. Yeah, 7 years.
Oh, if you count the fall. Six,
so
if you count the fall.
They waited 6 or 7 years to put out an album, and they're like, okay, we're finally coming back. We've got to make a big album. It's going to have Dram on it and Jenny Beth and all of this whole stacked head to toe of features and guests and Danny Brown and Kalila and all and De La Soul and all these artists. And it was horrible. It was really, 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 really bad. And they were like, oh, we fucked up. Let's just go make a Gorillaz album now. Like, they literally just like, let's make basically what is seemingly just a good Gorillaz album. And they're like, we just need to get this out there as soon as possible so people remember that we're the Gorillaz. And, like, it's honestly not a bad strategy. Like, if this is just a really well-put-together basic Gorillaz album, it will honestly put them in, like, a lot better position than they were in 6 months ago, because, like, only they can make Gorillaz. Like, only Damon Albarn can make Gorillaz albums still, and he has a monopoly on that, so he should just do that while he figures out whatever his next big move is. Just make good Gorillaz music and make more of it. IMO. And that's really all. It's so simple. It's like, I don't even know what to talk about it as a single. It's just like, oh yeah, this is a Gorillaz song and it's good, actually. That's all I have to say about it. I like it a lot. I'm gonna listen to it a lot, but that's just all I feel.
I need to actually listen to it knowing that it's good, because I still have not listened to Humans out of spite. And I think at this point, I just never should.
Same.
Your life is better not knowing how disappointing the Jenny Beth Gorillaz collab is.
That's
like,
true.
When can we just pretend that it didn't happen and be like, man, I can't believe those glorious tastes were lost in the Jenny Beth Gorillaz studio sessions. We'll never know what those sound like.
I mean, that's what I've been doing for the last 14 months. So
yeah,
I'm
basically.
Just gonna stick with it.
I mean, no, Damon. Yeah, I mean, like, Damon Albarn. Like, let's be real. He's kind of a dumbass. Like, this dude. He had a chance to fucking be in the studio with Prince. All right, fucking Prince. And Prince is like, "Hey, you can't smoke in my studio." And he's like, "Oh, well, I'm just not. Sorry, dude. Just can't do it." Like, Damon,
yeah.
Buddy, pal, what's wrong with you?
I mean, I've already suspected that he's a dumbass just based on most things about Humans. So, currently, that's generally how I feel about them. But hey, these are good. These songs, I like
yeah, the
both,
thing
both
is
the
that,
singles.
Yeah.
The single the thing is Humility, that
Damon
Albarn
is really good at being. Yep.
Okay, so who's going to talk first? Who's going to talk
Go
first?
Ahead. Go ahead.
The thing is, Damon Albarn is really good at being sad, but he's probably better served when he's being, like, not really happy, per se, but not down in the dumps. And that's what he goes for that on this new single, and it works. Like, I like the upbeat Gorillaz songs, maybe not as much as the sad, the downcast ones, but the happy ones have their merits, so that's good. This single is good. Maybe this album will be good. I don't know.
I certainly hope so. It would be really nice if they just kind of did a back-to-basics album, which is what it seems like they're doing, so I'm gladly accepting this, and hopefully just, like, if there's just a Gorillaz album I can enjoy front-to-back, I will take that in a heartbeat, please. Thank you. Even if it's not as, like, reaching for the stars as Humans clearly was. Like, there was a whole rollout, and there were all these things, and it was just, like, everything didn't work, and so they're just like, fuck it, just take a single art, here's this new song. Just take a song. Just really trying something. So I hope this album is good. That's all I'll say.
Boom. But speaking of being downbeat and sad, but which we'll actually get into a little bit, the new James Blake single, Don't Miss It. He just randomly dropped this on YouTube with a music video that's him just, like, typing out the lyrics in the Notes app, which is
something I was surprised no one had ever done before. I was like, oh, I can't believe I haven't seen this done.
I feel like people
it's such a perfect idea, and given the content of the lyrics, it's so heart-wrenching too. Like, that was my first reaction to this video was like, oh, James Blake made me cry at an iPhone memo.
Oh yeah, one of the genius things about it is that, like, because he's, like, waiting, and then typing it out as he says it, it's almost like he's, like, having a difficult iPhone conversation with a person and, like, thinking about what he's saying and then, like, quickly typing out. Like, there's, like, emotion to the way that, like, these words pop up on the screen that's, like, so idiosyncratic. I'm just like, God damn it, James Blake, you're a genius, aren't you? You're, like,
yeah,
kind
well,
of
like,
a
the
little
jittery way, like, the autocorrect falls into place really sort of matches, like, the vocal warbling that's going on.
Yes, I know. It's trippy. It's really, like, yeah, and, like, James Blake's current obsession with, like, these skipping lyrics that are, like, glitched out and, like, off-kilter is so interesting, and it doesn't, sometimes it, like, I'm just like, whatever, I don't really like this, and sometimes it, like, it can hit just in the right way with his production that's just, like, no one else can make music that sounds like this, and you just feel that so strongly when you listen to his music. Like, it's just so distinctly him.
Yeah, and I said that right when Color and Anything came out, that, like, one of his great talents is that he is maybe better than anyone else at getting, like, the biggest emotional range out of, like, the fewest words. Like, he can just repeat a line different ways and get, like, 100 different tones out of it over the course of a song, which is basically what happens in the song.
His voice is like a gift from God, is the reason for that. He says,
yes,
he had the vocal range to capture the emotional range. Yeah, I'm wondering what he's doing right now, because it just seems like he's just kind of dropping music here and there, but these definitely don't feel like at all singles. Maybe he'll give us an EP or something, or maybe he's just gonna put out songs when he decides to. Who knows? But
yeah, it might be a bit until the next album, because I mean, he's in a healthy relationship right now, so you can't get a full length that way.
I doubt. Oh, but I think that's a good transition though. Because I think what he posted about was very important, and I think a lot of people kind of, so if you didn't catch this, basically the Pitchfork write-up of this single was, like, totally bullshit. Like, and it wasn't just, like, basically, so he complained specifically about the classifying of his music as quote-unquote sad boy music, in that it completely, like, trivializes, like, the potent emotions he's expressing. And, like, I think that is a very valid point, because a lot of sad musicians are just kind of, like, given this label, like, oh, your music for sad time, you're a sad boy, or whatever, and it's like, these are my fucking emotions, and you're talking about them in this, like, really kind of dismissive way that they did in the Pitchfork article, and I think it was more about, like, the way the article was written rather than just the term sad boy, and a lot of people were like, oh, stop complaining about being called a sad boy. It's like, that's not what he's talking about. What he was talking about is the way that, like, the journalism, the way that music fans kind of are consuming sad, quote-unquote sad music and perceiving it in that way. And he also linked that to kind of the ways that masculine emotions are not well accepted, kind of, and like that's such a problem for men, is being able to express emotions like that openly. And so that's some smart ass shit, and James Blake is right about all of it, and I'm very happy that he said all those things, because I can imagine that when you're like really trying to portray these complex emotions in these songs you write, and people are like, oh, you're such a sad boy, you down in the dumps, Mr. Sad Boy, you sad man, it's like, yeah I fucking am, and I'm making songs about it, leave me alone, god damn it.
Kevin Lozano, retire, bitch.
Yeah, absolutely not a fan of that at all. But I am a fan of the James Blake single. I think it's good.
Yeah, I do like the single a lot. It's I do like this new direction, sort of going back to sort of more glitchiness, but like still keeping, there's still a lot of emotion behind these tracks. Like, you know, if the car besides you moves ahead is like, what the first time you listen to it, you're like, what the fuck is this? But of course, you listen to it again and again and again. It's fucking great. But this obviously is a bit more focused. It's a bit more sort of a much more traditional track, and I think it's very good. James Blake, as Lily said, he's so goddamn good at basically, you know, pulling the most emotion out of so little, you know. I'm not sure if he is the best, you know, but, like, you know me, the Redeemer, Dean Blunt, I mean, hey. I think he's good at that stuff, too. But I think James Blake is just, again, he was sort of my gateway into indie music, and I love him a lot, and he still continued to be good after all these years, and his letter was very important and very necessary, and it is, like, the whole sad boy thing. I mean, even as someone myself who, like, would probably, like, 2 or 3 years ago consider himself, oh, yeah, I'm a sad boy, like, that shit sucks. To generalize yourself as that, and it sucks to be generalized as that, you know.
And it also feels like a fetishization of it in a way.
Exactly.
Like it's either used dismissively to talk about his music, or it's being used in a way that kind of, it's like part of that like depression fetishization that Twitter culture has and stuff like that. And it's like, no, this stuff sucks. And if people are talking about it, it's because they want to release it into the open and feel better about it.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Because art is a cathartic experience for lots of people. Sometimes it isn't. Some people just make songs to make songs for people to listen to. And some people use art as, like, a vehicle to get things out of their body. Like, as in the concept album of The Ooze, King Cruel. That was, like, what the album was about. And this is a very similar sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's move on. We've talked a lot about that.
Yes. Let's talk about the next track. Jackson. Ooh. This new Idols track, Colossus. Jackson, I know you've been wanting to go in. Go in, boy.
So last year, this band called Idols put out their debut album, I believe. I think they had some EPs and some splits and stuff before that. And they put out their debut album, Brutalism, which is a very, 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 very good punk record. A very British, politically tinged, but not like blatantly political. Like, the thing I've talked about with their music is they basically kind of, like, capture, like, the emotions of like real political struggles and like talk more about like real like actual like gender and political like on the ground issues rather than talking about like, oh fuck Brexit, those load of wankers. It's not that kind of stuff. It's like really tapping into the existential like angst around like things like labor politics and religion and gender and things like that. And their music, their first album is just like, it is very straightforward. Like, this is a noisy post-punk album. It's like exactly, it's very dynamic and it's very incredibly well played, but it just like is what it is, and most of the uniqueness of it comes from the lyrical delivery and the frontman performance of their lead singer. And this song is like, okay, cool, we've established our foothold in the rock community, now time to do some shit, some wild old kind of swans like rock music. That the first 4 minutes of the song kind of slowly builds into this cacophonous, crazy, like swans like rock song that's angular and really kind of super fucking cool and menacing, and the lyrics are so incredible, and we'll get into that a little bit. But then also, after going into this Swans build-up, the song completely stops for, like, 10 seconds. And then, or like, I don't know how long it is, but the song completely stops, waits a little bit, and then launches into, like, a minute and a half punk song at the end, which is just, like, it's really dynamically constructed, but in a way that completely works, and it is such a good first single. I'm sure there will be lots of songs on this next album that are just, like, idols punk songs, but releasing this as your next single a year after putting out Brutalism is, like, hey, we are going to, like, start pushing yourself in different places. We're not just going to keep churning out the same stuff. Like, this is a declaration of, like, artistic intent, and it is a fucking doozy. This has me beyond excited for a new Idols album. Like, sign me up for Idols season tickets, please. I am all in. It's good, folks.
I would agree. You were bulling in my text about this. On my damn iMessage about this, and it is a very good track. I had a little snot in my throat, but it is good. But yeah, the switch up, it took me. But I was like, "Whoa, what the fuck is going on?" And it's like, and also the video. The video is great too.
The video is incredible. It has such a super. Oh, by the way, the single is called Colossus. I always forget to say the name of the song. I start talking about it. The song is called Colossus, and there's a video for it that is really, really, really well done. A lot of their videos in their last album were, like, good conceptually, but clearly have no money. And clearly they were given some amount of dollars for this music video and immediately put out something that is completely wild and creative and visually arresting and really, really fits some of the lyrics of the song are, like, incredible. Like, really, 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 really good. And especially the refrain, the "Forgive me, Father, I have sinned" refrain part, and then really specifically the thing where, hold on, "I don't want to be your man, I don't want to be your man," and then the whole part of the end where he's like, "I'm Stone Cold Steve Austin, I put homophobes in costumes, I'm like Fred Astaire, I dance like I don't care." That whole part of the end during the punk song is just, like, so, the way that they can be incredibly serious about these issues of, like, toxic masculinity and politics and things like that, and give them, like, the seriousness they deserve, but then also be able to then in the same breath be funny and, like, sarcastic and kind of snot-nosed about some of the same things is, like, one of their greatest skills, that they can encapsulate both of those into their music, where it's like you're having fun but you're also really, like, tapping into some real shit. And I really like what the mix of things that they got going on, and I'm all here for it.
Oh, another note about the music video, though. This boy got some chompers on him. He got some teeth on him.
His performance style, the way that he, like, contorts his face and stuff as he sings, is just like very, like, magnetically, like, charismatic in a way that it's, like, super dirty charisma in a great way. Love. He's a really, really, really good frontman for this band, and makes a great, like, star for their music videos.
Boom.
Big fan. Next single.
This new Moses Sumney. It's sort of a slight EP. It's an EP, but it's all the same song, but it's different versions by different artists. There's an extended version.
It's called the Chameleon Suite, is what he called it. So there's an extended version. There's the Alex Isley version, yeah. I think. Which is it is basically the extended version, but with, like, a female singer doing the second half of it, which is very, very nice. And then there's we're going to talk about the James Blake version of the song "Make Out of My Car," and then the Sufjan version of the song "Make Out of My Car." The James Blake one first, which is the one I know Maddie is more excited for.
I got some words. All right.
Go ahead.
Good evening, podcast listeners. This is your boy, Eat That Pussy 445, and about 30 to 45 minutes ago, I beat the fuck out of my dick so goddamn hard that I can't feel my leg. My left leg has gone numb, and my dick has gone totally numb that it feels fucking weird when I go and take a piss.
I'm hanging up.
This is... if you like the more experimental side of James Blake's music and the side where he's like really fucking around with vocals and skipping and the way the things that he does to Moses Sumney's voice here, like the combination of James Blake's like knack for editing vocals and Moses Sumney's voice being the instrument from God that it is like quite an insane combination that makes things that sound like things I've never heard in my life before. I don't know if it like works as a song, but I like don't care because I'm just like the fact that you did this is cool enough for me. I don't even need to listen to it. Like it's just it's really and also like the kind of sped up like almost rapping thing that Moses Sumney does in falsetto on this song is wild. He absolutely snaps. Yeah, it's good.
Agreed. Yes. Yeah,
I had not listened to this in full before and like tried to listen to it right before we started recording and I had to stop 30 seconds in because it was doing things to my body and I was like, I cannot be distracted for this entire podcast. There are going to be consequences if I continue to listen to this.
Yeah, and that is 100% how I feel about the Sufjan song, which I did not listen to before this podcast because it would have just completely put me in some other place because this Sufjan so this EP is really genius because it took what was a 2-minute song on the Moses Sumney album and like really like stretched it out and then brought in other artistic voices and like found all these different like elements of the song that were there originally but like weren't really it's such a genius kind of exploration of a single song concept and the way that the song goes from being this like very jazzy, very steamy and sexual song when it's a Moses Sumney song, and then all of a sudden Sufjan's like, okay, let me take this sexy song that Moses Sumney in his live performance described it as a song about licking people's faces and then he's like, okay, I like what you're doing with that, let me make it really, really soft and Christian and gay, and then he just does that. And it's and the way that he specifically harmonizes the "Make Out in My Car" refrain is like I think it is one of the top like 3 or 4 single prettiest Sufjan vocal harmonies. It's just like an actual angel. It just sounds like an angel is singing the refrain. And then the way that like later in the song Moses starts doing background harmony vocals for Sufjan's cover of his own song is like. Literally, like, put a white robe on me and just let me ascend. I'll just float upwards. I'm this song destroys me like completely. It's so good. I was driving home from Palm Springs, I think, on the day it came out, and so I had a 2-hour car ride, and I probably listened to it like 8 to 20 times, somewhere in that range. It's really good. I love it a lot. It's my favorite Sufjan song since Carrie and Lowell. It's better than all. It's better than Mystery of Love and Visions of Gideon, I think, to me. But that's just my personal opinion. I'm also a Moses Sumney stan, so that's part of it.
I hate to admit that I didn't love this that much. Like, it's good, objectively. It's fine. But, like, the main problem for me is that, like, if you were to, like, build a computer that could, like, take any song and, like, feed it through an algorithm to make it a Sufjan Stevens song, like, it would sound like this. Like, it's the most by-the-numbers Sufjan.
It is very by-the-numbers, but, like, for me at least, it's, like, by-the-numbers Sufjan that taps into, like, a very specific thing that he's doing lyrically and vocally in a way that, like, it compels me so much that I like, don't even notice that it's... I think that's a valid criticism, but it's, like, for me, for whatever reason, like, the song works in a way that I'm just like completely transported by it, where it's just like I can't even hear that it is a very simple, just like straightforward guitar and Sufjan's voice, and it is like exactly the dictionary definition of a Sufjan Stevens song, but I'm too busy being on like Venus just like somewhere else with this, so I totally understand your criticisms of it, but like for me, it just worked in a way that I never really like. I love the Sufjan songs Call Me By Your Name, but they were never really like songs that I played on crazy repeat, like some of my favorite Sufjan songs, and this is one of those for me.
Yeah, I might appreciate this more, like maybe if I was more familiar with the original, but I just kind of wish it didn't sound like Carrie and Lowell, but more.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, is that like it's not just that it's a by the number Sufjan song, it's that he took another song that is 0% that and he turned it into one, and so like for me, yeah. That's it's more kind of wow, this is incredible. how this song has been completely transformed. And so it's easier for me to not think about how it is transformed in a way that's similar to his other music.
Yeah, that makes sense. This encourages me to get into aromanticism more, so I can appreciate his Pitchfork set.
Do it. Still a thing it's I need to so do. It's so good. It's so good. I mean, we'll talk about this after Pitchfork, I'm sure, and so all you can appreciate this, but Jesus goddamn Christ, that guy can sing. Like, there are points in his Coachella set where I was just like, calm down, please. Like, you can sing so well. It's, like, overwhelming. Please stop. Like, I need this to stop for 5 minutes so I can just breathe for a bit. his vocals are, and he uses like five different microphones on stage that all have like different effects on them, and he's also playing with vocal pedals and loops and things the whole goddamn time. It's wild stuff. Very excited for that. Anyways, yeah, Moe's Somebody Good, Sue Chance Even Good, singles good.
But it is time.
We did it.
It is time.
Yes.
Pusha T. Pusha T has had a very busy week or so, and so has Drake to an extent. But
probably the busiest week of Pusha T's career, if maybe not for like the week Grindin' came out. I don't know. Like this is about as big as it's gotten for Pusha T. And we'll talk about a little bit about like how this is kind of weirdly important for his career. I think that's an interesting angle of this. But
let's run down the timeline of what timeline. Has happened.
So can I take the lead here?
Go ahead.
All right. So I'm going to take it because this is officially the first podcast in a post Pusha T new music universe. So we've got to go all the way back because Zach and myself have just been suffering for a while. Sometimes an album comes out that you have to suffer for, and this is one of those albums, because we received an album that was meant as a prelude to another album, which of course is going to ramp up excitement for that album. And generally what artists do when they ramp up excitement for something is then release something else. Pusha T, however, does not appreciate this strategy at all, and is more a fan of the make people expect something and then make them wait. And then when you finally deliver, be like, how dare you accuse me of making you wait? You will get it when you get it, and goddamn it, if it's gonna sound like this, I'll allow it. Take as long as you need. Go on a vacation to the Bahamas for 4 years and come back with all of your coke reps, because I just this is like sometimes like I was listening like people, this is truly like formalist art where it's like Pusha T is making the same song over and over and over again in a way that is so specific and defined that it straight up does not matter. He's just like, this is what I make. I make this song, and I'm going to try to make this song in 1,000 different ways, and it's genuinely worth listening to pretty much every time he does it. And this is so, like, we get Daytona. We get this album. It's incredible, and we've been waiting for it for so long. And on the last song of the album, he decides to make some pretty, they were aggressive disses at Drake, but like the same kind
but
of stuff.
But it's not nothing we haven't heard.
Exactly. He's done this exactly.
It was
exact
a standard thing. Grade diss. Like, it wasn't, you know.
No, but the thing is that we were in the middle of like a 10-year-long cold war between Pusha T and Drake, where it was like they've hated each other for forever, but neither of them has ever like needed to do anything about it, because there was never really like a misdoing big enough to really warrant either of them to kind of like go out of their way to attack the other one. And for whatever reason, like I think I know what reason. The reason is Drake has an album coming out next month, and conveniently someone has dissed him literally weeks before his album date, and he's just like, oh, perfect, I'm gonna do the Meek Mill thing again, which I thought was super, super duper smart, because the thing is that we were living in this world where Drake couldn't take L's. Like, objectively bad things would happen to Drake, and he had this Teflon bubble around him that made it impossible for any of it to rub off on his career success at all. And so Drake, thinking that, was like, well, I probably shouldn't get into beef with Pusha T because he's a better rapper than me, but I'm Drake and I can't lose ever, so there's no downside to getting lots of promo for my album, and I'm going to do it. And it would appear that Drake has made some miscalculations. Because after dropping Duppy Freestyle,
which we will get to,
and then after dropping I'm Upset, which we will also get to, Drake tried to do the back-to-back model again, where you release a diss track and then you release another diss track that is even better and is like a hit song and is more, is something that gets played in the clubs, and that song becomes like huge and lots of people play it, and it completely drowns out any chance for a response. Like, Meek Mill couldn't respond after back-to-back. He was completely like incapacitated in one swift like samurai sword to the neck by Drake. And it was like, and Drake thought, if I come out with a diss within 24 hours and then another single within 24 hours, I can just ambush him and just take him out in one blow, where he has taken such a big public loss that he doesn't even get a chance to really fire back. But what he did not know is that Pusha T is an investigative journalist. And Pusha T just knows things sentiently. Just like aware of things and is able to tap. And then we get the story of Added On, which is maybe the biggest diss track since, like, you have to go back to like probably something like 50 Cent era, like early 2000s. Like, you have to go back.
Yeah, or even days. Like Ether, probably.
A lot of people immediately said, the funny thing was that like bad Drake fans on Twitter were like, is Duppy Freestyle the new Ether? And it was like,
if we consider like Takeover, the story of Added On, yeah, kind of.
I mean, sort of, but like.
But not.
W Freestyle wasn't bad, is the thing. But the thing is that when you release that, if he had come back, if Pusha T had come back with a good single, W Freestyle was good enough that Drake could have won easily. But just it just. After you get owned like that, it's like you can't listen to W Freestyle now. You just can't.
No, you can't.
Because you just laugh.
Yeah, and no, because... I did that. I listened to Story of Added On. Like, I did it in reverse. I listened to Story of Added On and then W Freestyle afterwards. And listening to Drake on W Freestyle now is like, it's oddly. It's like you sympathize with him. You just want to be like, oh, sweetie, like, have no idea. Oh no! Oh. You thought this was gonna be it. You thought you were done, and now here we are, buddy.
Which I think one of the most amazing things about this is that, like, I talked about how Drake was just on this like impossible winning spree, where like things would happen to him, like Rihanna completely rejecting him would be something that any other person would get made fun of for all the time, but Drake doesn't because he's Drake and he has this like. Such a deep well of success that you can't really make fun of him because he's Drake. And like, even though he's taking like a huge L, it's like no matter what happens, Drake is the most successful recording artist in America. He is infinitely rich and is like fine. And like, it's kind of impossible for him to take an L. But like,
Drake can take L's, but taking L's is like he made that part of his aesthetic. It's almost like the more L's he takes, the more Drake he becomes. So you couldn't like throw anything at him, and then Pusha just changed the paradigm by being like, "You're a bad person."
Yeah, like you're just shitty. You're just not. You're just like, and like it's making people like genuinely like it's stuff that they're making fun of Drake for the first time that like actually has lands a. blow, like, because most of the stuff that people come at Drake is it's like you're a use ghostwriters, and he's like, no, I don't, and he's like, yes, you do, no, I don't. That never makes for like compelling beef or anything that really connects. But let me tell you, your dad doesn't love you, and you have a child. You are hiding a child.
You are hiding a child.
I have not much to say, but
Pusha went, like, here's, like, Drake is like, ha-ha, you never, you know, you're kind of lying about, you know, how many drugs you sold. Do you know that the tweet of, like, the guy, like, of that, like, prison reality show of, like, Drake's like, ha-ha, you didn't sell as many drugs as you said. And then fucking Pusha T is like, First view is like, you are hiding a child, and you are a deadbeat-ass dad, your dad wasn't there for you, your friend is dying, and it's like...
I mean, truly Pulitzer-worthy. Like, here's what happened. Normally, in a beef, you dig up dirt. Pusha T did not just dig up dirt. Like, he went to Canada, got a geology degree, bored deep into the earth, carbon dated the bottom layer of sediment, and presented the findings at a scientific conference.
He dug up the whole fucking coffin.
Or, hear me out. He just hired Narwhar.
Okay,
that's what he did.
Narwhar is too. He's too neutral of a party. I don't stand by that theory. He's too neutral of a party.
No. You know what theory makes
more
sense?
It's Kris Jenner. For me, it's Kris Jenner.
Do you know how
exactly?
Do you know how much beef Narwhar has on people? Do you know how much stuff he has?
Yeah, but Narwhar never. Narwhar is an all-knowing being that keeps all of his knowledge to himself. Except the only power he uses it for, like Narwhar knows everything, but the only thing he does it for is to pleasantly surprise music artists by showing them albums they used to like. So he's literally a superhero that uses his power in the most responsible, niche, joy-causing way possible. Is my theory on Narwhar as just a human being, and that's why Narwhar. But the thing is, it 100% is Kris Jenner. Like Kris Jenner definitely has more shooters than like any rapper combined. Like Kris, I am so much more scared of Kris Jenner than a lot of rappers that talk about killing people. Like genuinely, like she is like a truly powerful person in a way that is acting. It's like, oh yeah. Like, Kris Jenner just called up someone and had all this, like, in a, like, Excel document within, like, 2 hours. Like, it's just like, all right, for once, like, very rarely is this true, but for once, being affiliated with the Kardashians is probably helping Pusha T, which is good.
So much.
If it gives us this kind of pure, raw firepower about, I mean, but this is, like, it was known, but it was just, like, one of those, this feels, like, weirdly similar to kind of, like, a lot of the like scandals where it's just like these things were out in the open and just no one cared about them for a long time, and it's just like it's one of those sorts of things. It's like we all knew this stuff. People there were stories about like Drake has a secret kid or whatever, like possibly, but it was never laid out in front of the public in a like it was the story he was born to tell. And it's the disrespect level of the song is the best part, because like he manages to be so incredibly mean, like truly crossing the line level stuff, but never once sounds remotely angry. Like he does not sound mad or pissed off. He is just like, you child. The amount of like condescension and snark, and I think nothing encapsulates that as good as the end of it, where he's like, you talking about you upset, and then he just laughs in his face and he's like, I want to see what it looks like when you get angry. Was just like, It's so great, because it just sets it up by the end. It's like, unless Drake comes back with the best diss track of all time, it's like, he can't respond.
It's the, like, that's cute of responses.
Like Pusha T chuckled, you mean the Chaos Emeralds? Like, that's the level he's on with this track.
No, we're like on levels of, like, have you seen those vines where, like, adult people cross up babies and get them to, like, break their ankles? Like that. Like a toddler wanders onto a basketball court, someone crosses them up. It's like that's what it felt like emotionally.
We've talked about then, like there's some like OVO 40 hunched over like he 80. Tick tick tick. How much time he got? That man is sick sick sick. Like
that was the thing that was like truly like, and that was like he should not have done that. But it's like
it's so good.
But the fact that he. Like the thing is that like if you cross a line and you don't have the right kind of, but he manages to successfully land so many blows on Drake that no one cares that he crossed the line, because he's like this folk hero that's like, it's like in the terrible Batman vs Superhero movie, it's like, if it bleeds we can kill it. It's like someone has finally like landed a blow on the reigning champion, and people are like losing their minds, like it's Tyson and Tyson B. Douglas, like someone might be able to defeat the champion, and it's like thrilling in a way that is like truly one of a kind. And because Drake was winning for so long, song is part of why this feels so monumental. It's like, oh, there is so much negative press about Drake right now, which is just never a thing that happens.
No,
it's
like,
it's truly why.
Like, let's discuss very quick the Big Quit first reaction. Like,
oh my god,
there are so, like, Big Quit has said, like, he, like, towards the beginning, he's like, you have to fight this dude. Like, you have to fight him. Like, the not even 30 seconds. Not even 30 seconds.
He looks deeply into the camera and is like, Big Quint genuinely in that moment believes he is speaking directly to Drake. And Drake is like, Drake, you need to fight this man now.
Yeah.
It might be my favorite Big Quint video, like, ever. It's the faces that he makes, the way he just is like, they're the people with the most, like, a ability to contort their faces to express emotion is like Daniel Day-Lewis and Big Quint. they are the 1-2. It's incredible, like, how he is able to capture the pure insanity that is the it's like the going after both of his parents. Like, he goes after his mom. He, like, says mean things about Drake's mom, and it's so surgically executed, not to be too on the nose, but, like, it's so well done that no one can even, like, be upset about it because it's so undeniably entertaining.
It's the first time I've encountered a level of cruelty so problematic I have to respect it.
Like, we got ableism, we got slut shaming, it's all here, folks.
It's like... all here, and it's but it's utilized for a good, which is dunking on Drake, who is, like, as you said, like, an uncool person. Like, the thing is that part of the Drake shtick is, isn't it hilarious how this deeply uncool person who used to tweet about watching Aubrey Plaza interviews and eating granola. one of my favorite tweets truly of all time is a tweet by my friend Cam, aka Matrix Reloaded, which is he says, Drake, brand new Beretta, can't wait to let it go. Me, I believe you. Which is, that was the funny thing about Drake, was the idea that, like, anyone clear as day could tell that, like, half of the Drake lyrics are lies, but it's like the same thing with Pusha T. It's like, it doesn't matter that he wasn't actually dealing the cocaine. When you can say something the right way in a rap song, that's what matters. Like, Pusha T can say, I'm the L. Ron Hubbard of the cupboard. Like, it doesn't matter that he didn't actually deal the drugs, guys. The fact that he can say that out loud is, you should shower him in praise.
I predict for that alone. Snow, Al Roker. Like,
that line is so good. Can we talk about Daytona a little more?
Okay, I think we've discussed the story about it enough. I think we've said a lot.
You are hiding a child.
You are hiding a child. That's all you need to say.
Jackson said a lot. I don't know about us three, but Jackson has.
Oh yeah,
I've said my word.
I blacked out for a second a little bit.
I have a few thoughts about Adidon I want to get off before we return to Daytona to talk. First of all, the way he started it, you just knew he had something brutal up his sleeve.
When you hear the story of OJ Beat start to come in,
oh my
just like,
god.
Oh,
that is such an incredible beat.
With the cover art too. Like,
with the cover art, which we didn't know existed. Like, we need to talk about the disc more, because the disc truly has so many layers that we need. The fact that he was able to dig up dirt that is so, like, embarrassing, not only embarrassing but also relevant. The fact that it's the story of OJ Beat, which the music video of which features this comical blackface style that, like, is exactly what Drake did in the song, which ties the beat to the concept to the picture, and also is so embarrassing that it forces Drake to release a, like, notes app apology Instagram, which is just like,
this man is calling for a timeout.
Also, Drake, the way that ties into the line, oh shit, what is it?
Guys, Drake responded to this disc the exact same way that Lena Dunham responds to, like, all of her controversies. Just to put you at, like, what kind of mindset Drake is in right now. Like, that's where he's at, is, like, Instagram note post explaining himself.
The triple hitter of the artwork, the beat, and then the line of afraid to grow it because your fro wouldn't nap enough.
That was one of the moments when I, like, I've listened to the song in the car, and I nearly crash it at a couple moments in the song every time, and that's one of them for sure.
Yeah, But, like, from those first few lines, to quote Jay Serrano, you just knew that Pusha T had a cannon full of glass and knives aimed directly at Drake's face.
Exactly. So many of these lyrics were so good that it is impossible he did not have them in the vault waiting. Like, that's really what Pusha's been doing, is that, like, it's clear from this song that, like, for years, Pusha had a legitimate gripe with Drake, did not like him, did not think he was, like, a good dude or anything, and is like, the moment I get this guy to take a legitimate like shot at me and try to take me out, he's like the predator, like sitting like, oh, I'm weak, come take me out, you can totally take me, Drake, come on, try it. And he's like, you've activated my trap card. Like, he was just waiting the whole time, and Drake completely fell for it and paid the consequences of Pusha T's wrath.
Yeah.
It was the equivalent of like the come hither gesture that Neo does in the Matrix against all the agents.
It was basically that, yeah.
Okay,
so most infrared was pointed at Drake, and it was pointed at like Birdman and Lil Wayne. Like, it was more about them than it was about Drake, and that's really where Push's beef stems from. It was more that like he hated Drake because Drake ran with people that he didn't, and then like their beef kind of arose out of like this. This has been going on since like Drake was. Early Drake. Like, this has been going on.
This goes back to what happened to that boy.
And the thing is, it never seemed like it was gonna be, like, a compelling beef. Like, when W Freestyle came out, like, people were just like, is this what it's gonna be? Like, you don't sell drugs, you don't write your lyrics. Like, that back and forth is not interesting. You know what's interesting? Finding out that the most famous artist in the world was hiding a child.
You are hiding a child!
I've abandoned my child!
Yeah. Duppy Freestyle is weird to look back on now, because, first of all, it's so nonchalant. Like, I'm
the
shocked.
The audacity. The nerve. The audacity. It's like...
He definitely recorded it while wearing a turtleneck.
Oh, 100%. And that's... The other part about it, too, is it's, like, the kind of way that it completely, like, I mean, people have made this joke about the There Will Be Blood, Abandon My Child scene, but I genuinely feel like the emotional resonance of that scene very well connects with what this beef is, because it is Pusha T is less successful than Drake. He is not as, Drake is going to go on and have number one hit record this summer again, and Pusha T is, like, not. But the fact that he was able to lure Drake into this world of battle rap, of which Drake thinks he's good at, because he was able to dispatch Meek Mill very effectively, but is not actually that good at writing diss records, really. Like, I mean, like, he's good. Like, Back to Back is amazing still, and, like, fun, but that's more like Back to Back is, like, a good song that has lots of disses in it, rather than being, like, the razor-sharpened sword that is Story of Adidon. It's just two different things.
Looking back on it, Drake made three mistakes. I'm going to rank them in ascending order of badness. Number three, the song he released immediately after Duppy Freestyle, he didn't bother to make it any good. It's probably the worst single of Drake's career.
I would not say that, but it's about as, like, eh as you get at a Drake song.
Alright. Number two, and this is very close to being number one, but number two, he mentioned Pusha T's family, including his fiance, by name. You do not bring family into rap beef. Yeah.
That's the thing is like with rap beef, it's like if you cross one line, now it's like, okay, all social norms are immediately just out the window. Like you've been given a get out of jail free pass. Be as cruel as humanly possible.
But the biggest mistake he made was assuming that Pusha T is an approachable dude. Like,
that's definitely number one.
I'm going to quote what I heard on the Shutdown Fullcast, because it's definitely the best way I've heard this described. Being with Pusha T is like being with Israel. You throw a rock in his general direction, and he responds by launching a 10-ton mega warhead at you and politely asks if he'd like to try again, please.
Yeah, like, he wrote, like, this is the dude who made Mr. Me Too. Like, I don't know if you forgot about that, but that happened. I mean, that was the other thing, is, like, a lot of people have commented on the fact that, like, most rap fans now in 2018 do not know who Pusha T is, because as something that Craig S. they pointed out on Twitter, every 2 years, a whole bunch of people show up to rap music that do not care about anything that happened before they started caring about rap music. And that is problematic. And is very well exampled by the fact that people are like, I do not know who Pusha T is. It's like, have you heard the best beat of all time, Grindin'? Literally number one. It's like, and like that was part of it, is that like Pusha T doesn't quite have, and this is genuinely great for his legacy. Like, this is going to help the Pusha, because Pusha T has had the albums for a long time. Like, between the classic Clips records and his contributions, he's never really had a great solo album, which I think Daytona is, by the way. But he's had enough good solo songs and enough classic albums of Clips that, like, he was going to be in, like, important rappers of the last two decades conversations. But, like, being able to step up to the plate and genuinely land a blow on the best rapper, like, the most popular rap artist in the world at the time is, like, truly, like, that is something that is on the Pusha T resume in every conversation from now on, and is, like, really genuinely good. Like people who should not be talking about Pusha T are talking about Pusha T this week, which is incredible. It is so fun listening to white people, like talk about Pusha T.
We all say, like us. We say,
yes. It is so it is so fun to listen to. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, like, CBS News is talking about this.
Rapper Pusher T has come out with a new diss song.
Pusher Terrence.
Oh.
Here's the thing. It's not just white people talking about Pusha T. Like, locals are talking about Pusha T. That's the distinction.
It's incredible. It's like, this guy has literally just been, like, writing lyrics about, like, Pyrex dishware for, like, years and years and years and years. And all of a sudden, like, people who just never would have encountered his music are bumping up against it in a way that is very interesting. But let's talk about Daytona now, because the other part of this is that
we haven't talked about the most interesting development, that being Pusha T is now living rent-free inside of Drake's head. Apparently Drake is offering $100,000 for anyone to dig up dirt on Pusha T, and now all I can picture is PND on Virginia Beach wearing a trench coat talking to people like, hey, you know this Terrence Thornton dude?
PND is on, like, page 11 of Google right now that says, Pusha T bad thing, ? Like, Pusha T scandal, ? Like, the whole OVO factory right now is just doing, like, deep Google research right now. But then Pusha T tweeted, he's like, you can't make up skeletons I don't have. And it's like, if they can't come up with anything, then Drake is, like, truly out of luck and is just to have to,
like,
drop an album. He's just gonna have to drop an album and hope it's good enough that people, I mean, you know, people, like, it's not like Drake is gonna put out an album and hundreds of thousands of and hundreds of millions and billions of people are going to listen to the Drake album. Like, no matter, I'm gonna listen to the Drake album, everyone's gonna listen to the Drake album, the Drake songs are going to be literally everywhere this summer. It's not going to change any of those things, but no one is going to be talking about Drake like this god who lords over culture in the same way. Like, he's just a thing that is, like, he's cemented himself into our lives in a way that he's not gonna go away, but, like, he legitimately has taken, like, image flack for this, which is so rare because he's so good at cultivating every second of how people perceive him.
I mean, Drake's already lost. I mean, he went to the Notes app, man. Like, you go to the Notes app, that's a loss. Like, that means you've that's a white flag.
No, right. the Notes app is
a white flag.
It's the Lena Dunham zone. You've entered the Lena Dunham zone, the way that she apologizes for things. It's like, if you enter that zone, you're in a bad spot. You should turn back.
Yeah, like, we all knew Pusha T had something in response ready, and he might have more in response ready, fingers crossed. But he
said that he does.
We all knew, but...
I have more... He's got more in the tank.
Well, let's go back in time a bit. Like, did we think he stood much of a chance when he found out that Drake actually sent an invoice to Good Music? Because that was pretty decisive.
Also, the bar where he's like, you're not even top five on your label. It's like, Good Music does not have, weirdly enough for his title.
Does Good Music have five rappers, period?
Does Good Music have a lot of good music? Not
See,
really.
I mean,
like,
okay,
a lot of...
Like, this means that Drake thinks Casey Hill is better than Pusha T, which I think is, you know, an interesting but respectable take.
Admirable. No, actually, not really respectable. As much as I love you, Casey, sorry. That's just no.
Sorry, Casey.
The only
Casey we respect is Casey Musgraves.
No, we also respect... We respect Casey Hill very much on this podcast, personally. But anyways, let's talk
about...
Daytona, please, I need to talk about this album because it's good. We've talked for more minutes about the disc than the length of Daytona itself.
we're not
gonna get into the whole Kanye West album today because that literally is like a 3-hour conversation that needs to be had. That I just don't have the time or energy. So we're not gonna talk about Kanye. So I'm just going to refer to the person who produced the beats on this album, Snapped, because this is like maybe the best Kanye production we've heard in a long time, and because Pusha T's songs require a very kind of, the beats need to be very straightforward and direct. They need to be like these kind of like minimalist, hard hitting things, and because of what Pusha T songs require, it like force Kanye into a certain lane where he's like making these crazy trunk knocking soul sample like masterpieces, to be frank, and it is just like 7 songs and all of them are good and all of his lyrics are good, and it is like the Pusha T experience from his whole career really condensed into this like bite-sized silver bullet package that just like you fire it and it just destroys you completely. Like all the songs on here, every single song on here has a line that makes me like jump out of my seat. Like I cannot believe he just said that. The absolute madman.
Yeah, like Jackson and I and several others have been wandering through the desert for several years, and we have finally arrived at an oasis with drug dealer Benzes with gold diggers in them and elevator condos. And thank the Lord.
Thank the goddamn Lord. Like I just need to hear you talk about cars and places in Miami and different things that are white, and I just need all of it. And he gave me, I mean, my only complaint about this album is I think the 7 song album is like a genius concept that I'm actually very, I'm very upset is happening at this era in the good music in the good music arc. Like I would have loved to hear this kind of concept executed at a time where maybe Kanye West was in a better place, but like the idea of these just like bite size, but like the thing is, if on one of these 7 song albums, if you go 7 for 7, it's a like truly unique experience, which is like I called this 2018 Psychopomp, and it is similar in that it's a 20-minute album that is basically perfect front to back, and you can listen to it so quickly that you can like throw it on 3 times in an hour and just lose your goddamn mind, and it doesn't get old because every song is good and unique
and it doesn't outstay its welcome.
I know I can listen to Daytona for years. I know I can play this album all the time just as like a quick like hit of Pusha T to my serotonin receptors. Can we start talking about some lyrics from this thing? Because I would like to discuss.
Particularly, just to tap onto what you said first.
Go ahead,
Lily. To one up what you said. Like, the sound doesn't just go 7 for 7. Like, it goes 8 for 7. Like, not only are the songs all perfect, but they're, like, aggressively so. This album literally does not waste a second through any of its songs to the point of, like, not even having intros. It's like, how can we condense aggressive amounts of perfection into like the shortest amount of time possible?
I would argue
the feature on What Would Meek Do. Maybe.
Yeah, I was about to say that was the only point of the album where it's like, oh, okay, giving Kanye West time to talk about things is maybe not the best use of your 20 minutes time. But I mean, the Kanye verse is like passable in terms of like the flow and the delivery of it is entertaining, but like the MAGA hat line, I mean, like some of the lyrics are like okay, but like I can't even talk about just how I react to the verse without talking about my feelings in general, so I'm just skipping it. But
it starts funnily enough though.
Can we talk about If You Know, You Know as an intro to this album?
Oh my god.
Yes. Truly one of the most, like, memorable moments I've ever had listening to something. The way that it just, like, he's rapping his ass off over, like, no beat, and you're just kind of like, what's going on here all of a sudden? And when those vocal samples with the guitar chops in them, it's just like, it's like Kanye took, like, Nostalgia and the Sister Nancy part of Famous and, like, yeah, put those two things in a blender and just like
HGH,
yeah, and made it the most brolic sounding shit you've ever and then throw, combine that in with those, like, honking, like, Yeezus-y synth leads, which I don't even know how you make a sound that sounds like that, but yes, please, like, give me some of that insanity as Pusha T just, like, snaps for all the way through all the verses and chorus. It's just, like, unreal how crazy he just snaps on this first song and perfectly lays the, like, template of, like, what you're about to receive on this first track.
I lost my goddamn mind when he said, "Where were you when Big Meech brought the Tigers in?"
That was
life-changing.
Immediately followed by a dance contest for the Smokers, I predict Snow Al Roker, If You Know, You Know, I Only Ever Looked Up to Sosa, just like,
you,
immediately followed by You All Get a Bird This Man Over. Yes, like truly wild stuff going on this whole, and then immediately followed that by, I think, the best lyrical song on the album, Games We Play.
KW Chop, he has finally returned from the war.
KW Chop has returned from the war, and it's better than I expected. Which is wild.
Like, I'd like to propose that the third verse is the best part of the entire album.
I 100% agree.
He's just unconscious.
Caviar facials remove the toxins. This ain't for the conscious. This for the mud made monsters who grew up from legends from out of Yonkers. Like, my brain exploded. My whole it was splattered over the wall, like Pulp Fiction style. I died completely at many points during this album, but yeah. And then just the fact that the one non-Kanye West feature on this album is a Rick Ross feature.
Thank you, Rick Ross, which is
perfect, because Rick Ross exists on this world to do exactly one thing, and is to do exactly what he does on this verse. And
annihilate features.
And just like exist as, like, this regal king of, like, Miami drug dealers who just sits on a throne and calmly explains to you about the expensive things that he owns in his deep, deep voice over a beautiful beat. And that is all
great all-time rap voice.
It might be, it's like one of the best rock Ross features I've heard since, like, the feature on Direct Air. Yeah, it's been that long since we've heard Rick Ross on a beat this good.
I absolutely agree. And speaking of the beat, I don't know, this might be a hot take, but this is my favorite instrumental on the album. It's maybe not, like, the most inventive or the most out there one, but I am just such a sucker for, like, that sinister ethereal piano vibe that this nails, that, like,
it
play a minor chord forever and I'm happy.
Yeah, no, like, the way Kanye just is like, let me tap into some MBDTF juice real quick, which is like, there is a very specific song. The weird thing I think with Kanye is that is incorrect. The thing I'm about to say is not the weird thing with Kanye. The weird thing with Kanye is
there are several weird things with Kanye right now.
No, but the thing is that, like, with each of his albums, he continues, like, experimenting on those sounds down the road. Like, in his newer music, you can hear Yeezus reverberating into the future of his music, and you can hear Pablo in, like, in the new music and things. You don't really hear MBTF in other places. It kind of is isolated, and, like, he did that sound and then hasn't really returned to it in the 10 years since. And, like, Hard Piano is, like, the most he's ever just been like, hey, I can make that album again if I ever feel like it.
Yeah. It's just like he put MBDTF through, like, a Yeezus house fan.
Ooh, that is true. That's a little... That is a little bit like what a lot of, I mean, this album has, you can hear comparisons to a lot of his other stuff. It's very, like, incredibly Kanye in a way that I didn't think he could make beats like this anymore. And the fact that he can annoys me because it makes it harder for me to just forget about him forever. But, I mean, like, if you're going to make things for, just make things for other people so I don't have to hear him talk, because I can't do that right now. So just make beats for Pusha T and let Pusha T talk about all the different ways in which he can make cocaine, which are a lot, apparently.
Yeah, just put Kanye in front of a mixing desk with no microphone or phone, and then we're safe. We're safe forever.
There was a tweet reminding me of that. Oh, go ahead, Zach.
This beat is so good that Pusha T can get away with some very questionable lyrics in the first verse. That's
exactly
all I
want. True.
Yeah, but you don't even mind because you're just like, oh my god, that piano. But yeah, no, there reminds me of a tweet that I saw, which was after this album came out, someone was like, fuck Kanye mental health if you're making beats like this. Put a Professor X helmet on him. We need more. And I need more. Like, he taps into this very specific thing on these instrumentals that is just so perfect for what Pusha does. And, like, this is so good because, like, on My Name Is My Name, there were moments on that album where Pusha does, like, peak Pusha things. And there are other moments in that album where Pusha tries to be other rappers that he's not. Like, there's a song with Chris Brown on that My Name Is My Name album.
Oh, yeah.
It just isn't good. It just isn't good because it's not a Pusha T song. It's Pusha T trying to do another song. And, like I mean, on the Watch podcast this week, they compared Pusha T to, like, a formalist. Like, there's a novelist who's French who, like, writes the same novel over and over again, but, like, using different angles and slants to it, but literally writes the same novel over and over again, but people read his books because they're amazing and they, like, are one artist singularly focused on a singular idea, but then, like, exploring different variations and angles and crevices of that idea. And that's basically what Pusha T does in a weird way. Is Pusha T is like, this is what I do, this is what I'm about, and I am going to do better than all of you. And there's something so admirable about the singular focus that, like, he has since My Name Is My Name has honed it in even more, because he's had time for his, like, legacy as an artist to really cement where it's like, I am this guy, I'm just going to be this guy because I'm the best person at doing it. No one else is writing coke raps like this. Just no one is. No one else on planet Earth can write the bars that Pusha T can write.
Jackson, quick question.
Yes.
Can you leave the hair on alone? Can you?
I cannot leave the hair on alone, I'm afraid. Yeah, that was such a good, like, that was an incredible sample because of the combination of the sonic quality of it with the can't get, you try the methadone, you can't get, leave the hair on alone. That whole, it was just genius. There's just, of course, that someone was able to pull that sample up from the depths of music and just, like, completely repurpose it in a way that is so perfect for the song and the concept and the beat that goes with it. And
J Dilla dragged this up from the ninth circle of hell, dropped it in Kanye's lap and was like, here you go, and then left.
Basically, yes.
Like, yeah, I've not heard a more donuts moment on a song since Donuts.
It literally goes, like, full Donuts and then Metro Boomin with a hard cut in between, and then for the rest of the song just does that for 2 minutes while Pusha T says outrageous things.
Change you. That's how we know money ain't you. Just, oh my god.
Wrist for wrist, let's have a glow off. Fuck it, brick for brick, let's have a blow off. What? Excuse me? And god damn it, I have no more words. I'm just gonna do Pusha T ad libs and yugs and woos.
This is truly my longest yeah ever is the response to this album.
Truly one of the longest. And, like, seeing Pusha T kind of reach both, like, creative and cultural highs in the last week is, like, so fulfilling in a way that makes me very, I just wish it wasn't by the side of a dumbass. But I mean, the fact that he's getting this kind of success is very deserved, and I'm happy about it. And I love this goddamn album. I love it so much. It's good, folks. Also, it is really, truly a tragedy that we have to hear MAGA bars over the What Would Meek Do Over the what would make do beat, because that beat is truly like I mean, all of the beats of this album are insane, but most of them are in this kind of like lumbering, like I'm about to murder you way, like the way that like the way that the guitar kind of like
Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's a surgical summer. It's I'm coming to get you slow, but like what would Meek do is the one moment on the album where it's like, oh, we're stepping on the gas here. Like this is some like about to do some truly irresponsible stuff to this song music.
On
like,
top five in all of them, Dylan is how he starts.
The song starts with push. How do you people talking shit? Push. How do you respond? I'm top five and all of them Dylan. I mean, I don't like the Kanye feature, but the way of the talk shit boy. How do you respond? Like refrain is such a great way to like not have a hook on this song. The part of this song that makes me lose my mind is. Still on my shoulder, but what should we do? Devil on the other, what would Meek do? Papa Willie, tell the judge to Akinelli. Middle fingers out the gross scream in Machiavelli. And by the way, if you're not aware, Akinelli is a hip-hop artist who has one song, which I believe at the title of, he has like one hit song and the title of it is like Suck My Dick or something. I forget exactly what it is. It's like
put it in your mouth. The genius that's page right now. I just like read that bar on paper for the first time like a few minutes before you said it, and oh my god,
it is a crafted silver bullet of a rap line. It's just like You can look at it from every angle, like it's like the Michelangelo's David, and like every angle it's a work of art. Like it's that kind of like him. I'm using so many superlatives here. I don't even care. It's so good.
Just every other bar on this album is just like Pete Holmes' voice. What a fillet. That's how I feel about it.
The Papa Wheelie line is like it is basically the musical equivalent of the scene in Creed where they ride the dirt bikes down that street and played Meek Mill really loud. It is like, whew, oh boy, I'm about to lose my goddamn shit right here.
This is total fan fiction, but what if Pusha T's second song is a remix of this with Meek Mill?
Meek Mill is like, do not get me into this, because Meek Mill, we have learned, cannot win beefs with Drake. So he is going to be like, I'll sit this one out and be a civil rights icon now.
He's been waiting for this for so long, and he has never had a better opportunity.
I mean, yeah, but also, like, he also currently is, like, becoming a civil rights icon for, like, kind of good reason. And so I think he's just going to stick to... Yeah, like, he's going to be like, no, I'll just do TED Talks and hang out with Robert Kraft instead. I'm good. Like, I don't need to risk my public reputation by taking on the most popular artist. You have to be brave to imagine, like being like, okay, I'm going to release my diss song at Drake right now. Like, imagine being the kind of person that has a brain that is strong enough to do that. Like, and Pusha T is like, but Pusha T can, because he is so singularly confident in his ability to talk some damn shit. And also has Nardwar plugs or Kris Jenner plugs or whatever.
Okay, the thing is, like, I don't think Drake would let Meek get involved in this, because like that would open him up in a big way. Like then Drake you brought the guy I bodied like back into the fold.
Drake and Meek have also squashed the beef for all intents and purposes. So
alright.
Like, okay, that's like once again, let's just reestablish. Okay, so you know it's been going around that Facebook screenshot of someone stole my damn porch. Pusha T has stolen Drake's porch, okay? He's just stolen Drake's porch.
That is the level of disrespect where it's like, I can't even believe that you've done this, so I don't even know how to... If I was Drake, I wouldn't even... I mean, obviously, I would be furious. I would want to fight. It's like almost like I don't even know how to react to this. My brain just shuts off. The pure levels of individual targeted disrespect are at levels we just haven't seen before.
Yeah, it's like Cthulhu level forbidden knowledge.
All right, I think we're solid here. I think we've said our word.
I want to call out the infrared beat quickly for just being truly unlike any other beat I've heard. Like that is the most bizarre, out there, inventive. Just again, like we're throwing superlatives on this, but the infrared beat is incredible. It's so distinct and unsettling. Hey, it's amazing.
It's, like, it combines like the Arthur Russell sample from 30 Hours kind of vibe, but like on this like trunk knocking beat that then has that instrumental outro with the like with those drums. Are you kidding? Like the beat is like kind of sleepy and weird and ethereal, and it like almost doesn't work, but because Push is so aggressive over it, it works. And then when those drums come in at the end, it's like pure bliss. It's so good. And yeah. Also, what a way to end the album on, like, what is really, like, the most understated song on the album. Is just, like, the amount of confidence that it exudes kind of going out like that is just like, I've said, it's, like, he's saying a lot in that last song, but it's also, like, this kind of, I've said everything I need to say. Like, this is the seventh song, we're already done. I'm already finished with every other rapper. Like, I've declared myself enough. I don't need, he can say more in 20 minutes than most rappers can say. Say in 60, and that's what's wild about this album.
And
this,
that's this, this the song, tea.
That is the oh god damn it, Maddie.
I love you, Santoria.
I can't wait to strangle Maddie when he says these things in real life, like when we're in an actual
do it.
I can throw hands. I mean, Maddie and I are for sure going to fight about Bottomless Pit at some point during Pitchfork.
Oh,
like that's definitely. I'm just going to be screaming about Turned Off and Jenny Death and Bottomless Pit at you and be like, you're wrong.
Like, you're definitely going to pull I'm going to be J.R. Smith and you're going to be LeBron. Like, there's going to be some point at Pitchfork Fest. I think literally, like, that's going to be every person going to Pitchfork Fest with us. Like, everyone in the Airbnb, I'm going to say something or I'm going to do something that someone has to go do the LeBron at me. Just like, what is wrong?
Yes,
I think that was me most of last year doing that to everybody else in the Airbnb.
That was probably the case. I mean, you were the one who filmed the What's in My Bag video, so like... But, okay, folks.
We're definitely doing all that content for Pitchfork this year. Stay tuned for good stuff coming from Pitchfork Fest. Very soon come.
Exactly.
Yes, to be continued in 2 months.
Exactly. We will have.
I can't wait to be involved with the legendary sequel to what was the restaurant you guys had a podcast at?
TGI Fridays.
TGI Fridays.
Like, there's so much.
The
good,
biggest piece of gibberish we've ever released.
It was
truly inscrutable, but in a way that I loved.
It was bad. Hey, but anyways, hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. We'll be back in a couple of days as. We're going to do another Billboard podcast. It's time, baby. It's time to make fun of some pop music. It's time to reveal our hot takes about the most popular music in the goddamn
United States.
We'll
be talking about Mr. Drake again.
Yes.
In a very different context.
But a sneak preview of this Billboard episode. What takes do I got for us? Bitch, I'm little baby.
Okay. I thought you were about to launch into an actual take. No.
We're saving the real take for the episode.
Maddie and I are going to fight on the next episode, guaranteed. Stay tuned for that.
There's a lot of tension built up that we have not. Again, like I said, I've not been able to respond this podcast to some takes you made on the last podcast. But again, like I said, we will save it for the next episode. So I hope you guys enjoyed this one. We'll be back in a couple of days, hopefully. And, make sure to go follow us on Twitter at IndieHeadsPod. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a review. Helps us out. Gets us on the charts, maybe. We're not even going to on the charts.
We're on zero charts. Don't even ask that. Don't even ask that question.
But just leave a review. Leave a review. It makes us, it bumps up our numbers. It makes us look good.
If here's a tip. If you put up with our inane bullshit, tell your friends who you think would also put up with our inane bullshit to listen to our podcast. Tell a friend.
There you go. Also subscribe to us on YouTube and like our videos and all the, you know, at this point, you know, if you know, you know, okay? But we'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.